Anyway, as long as controls and directions and orders and postulates are resisted, a person then has a tendency to lock up with them. And what do you think a circuit is? What do you think one of these ridges are? What do you think of these other electronic phenomena in the mind? What do you think these things are? They are simply resisted orders. And who keeps them there? Will you do? How do you keep them there? By resisting them. And the moment you don't no longer resist them, they're gone. You say, what happened to them? How is it that a man can suffer from having lived as many years as he lived with his father when his father is no longer present? This is an oddity. The fellow's going around doing the things that his father did, and he's not quite sure who he is or where he is and so on. How could he possibly be in this condition because his father isn't present unless somehow or another he has suspended in his beingness his father's behavior pattern? And how has he suspended that? By resisting his father, of course. Papa probably ran very bad 8C. Papa said, go down to the pub and get me a small beer. No, don't do that. Well, what are you sitting there for? I told you to go down to the corner and get a small beer. The kid says, wait a minute. What is this? It's a confusion, that's what it is. It wasn't control, but it certainly looked like it. And the fellow, after a while, resists confusion, gets confused, decides the only unconfused point to be in a confusion is father, and takes on some of his identity. After that, he's not confused, he's just nuts. All right, these mechanisms we're familiar with. We're familiar with these mechanisms. Resistance to a thing brings about, one way or the other, a closure of terminals with the thing to such a degree that an individual then obeys it and doesn't know he's obeying it or what he is obeying, and that is more or less aberration. You don't like what somebody's doing on the street. He's beating up a girl or something like that. What do? You close terminals with him, don't you? You have to walk over to him. In other words, you resist his actions or emotions. And so you close terminals mentally with your environment. All right? If this stuff called radiation is used as a control factor, then a person is made to close terminals with something which his body cannot tolerate. But it is the person who is closing that terminal, not the body. And that is our foremost discovery. As long as we have an orientation on the subject of radiation, as long as we are no longer resisting it, as long as we're no longer upset about it, and particularly if we are in fair condition with regard to space, spaciousness, so forth, if we've not got claustrophobia or something like that, then we really don't have much trouble with radiation. Now, that's the first thing that we learned in Scientology, because believe me, this organization knows a great deal about radiation, since it was only 250 miles from 100 and some atomic bomb tests that were made in Nevada. The central headquarters of this organization were moved from Arizona only because grand pianos began to count like uranium mines. We were afraid people were going to dash into the living room at any moment and start mining the safe. Because it counted too. Everything was live and radioactive. The dust blew you in the face at night and you'd have a sunburn. But there was no sun. Now, that's just too much radiation. So we had a lot of experience with this, so we found out something very peculiar. We found out those people who were in good condition were not in restimulation with regard to radiation, and those people who were in bad condition would get something that would hardly count on a Geiger counter and get sick at their stomachs. And those cases that were straightened out got no further repercussion from radiation. What technique was used? Just auditing. Auditing brings about a tolerance of the physical universe. You have to tolerate it. Now, the next thing that was learned is that you never audit a particle. That is news to you. Just never audit a particle. always audit a terminal. Just don't have anything to do with particles. Normally, they are things which come off of terminals. And if you solve the terminal, you solve the particle. If you try to solve the particle without solving the terminal, you get sick. So, it has to do with the terminal. You solve problems with the nearest terminal to the particle. This is interesting in terms of words. If it was mother that told you that all women were alike and gave you marital trouble, or if it was mother who told you that all men were alike and so gave you marital trouble, all you have to do is mock up mother and make her a little more solid a few times, and her words appear and blow away. Now, what is that but a particle? The symbols she emitted, when reassigned to her, give you a release from them. Those are particles. Now, just consider this whole thing about words, phrases, meanings, significances, particles, all in the same breath. They are solved by addressing terminals. As soon as you can get somebody on a straight wire, you're just asking people questions about their past, and you say, they say, oh, I just have a terrible headache. Works a certain percentage of the time. All you have to do is ask them, do you know anybody who had a headache? Big calm lag. They finally say, well, my father had headaches all the time. Oh, he did? Well, you remember an exact moment when your father had a headache? Yes. Good, you say. Look around the room. He does. You say, how's your headache? I haven't got one. This works enough of the time. When it doesn't work, he has so resisted father's headache that when you ask him to remember it, he gets stuck looking at father with a headache. He doesn't have his own headache. He has father's. Now, anybody, any layman, like a Scientologist, can make this experiment because he's working around people who have all sorts of interesting things wrong with them. Fellow comes in and he's got a black eye, and you say, do you recall anybody who ever had a black eye? And he says, yes, me. You say, you recall a time when you had a black eye? And he said, yes. Last night. You say, any other time when you had a black eye? No, I never before had a black eye. Never in my life had a black eye. Never. Nobody ever gave me a black eye. But do you recall another black eye? No, the one I gave my brother when I was a little kid. Yeah. And you say, well, do you remember the exact moment when you did that? Yes, I do. I felt awfully bad about it. Well, look around the room. Right here? How's your black eye? It's diminished. See, this is the necromancy involved, the magic involved with it. What do? You make him look at source. And listen, particles were never sources. Terminals are sources. So you make people look at terminals, don't make them look at particles. When you have them make things a little more solid, you make sure they make a terminal a little more solid, and they will stop worrying about particles. This is an interesting datum, but one which has been developed out of this work. Anybody working in the field of the mind learns dozens of these tricks. We have dozens of them. We do all sorts of weird things. Now, the other thing is the spot where you work on the known location, not the unknown location. Fellow came in one day, he'd been driving past one of these explosion bomb sites, and his eyes were all swollen up, and he had practically run into both sides of the street driving into the place because he had been driving past the bomb explosion site at some distance away when he saw the flash on the horizon, and at once his face swelled, his eyes swelled, and he was in terrible condition. He felt very badly about it. He just had propped his eyes open just enough to get back to Phoenix. And he walked in and he says, for God's sake, somebody audit me. So I said, well, where'd you see it? Where are you? 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 No swollen eyes and no face. Difficult. You see that? Spot the location. That's the other one. Now, we know those as assists. They're very simple, very elementary, nothing much to them, and they do work. Now, I don't say that they would work on a major, major burn, but they certainly work on something like a secondary flash. All right, so much for that. If we have solved it to that degree, we have individual auditing, just in general, as a basic solution. How about group auditing? Well, group auditing solves this control factor. It solves the communication factor to a marked degree, just conducted as itself, group auditing. It works, in other words, in proofing up on this radiation factor. Now, the reaction to radiation in persons who have been given Scientology processing is, by actual test, much lower than those that had not received any. Now, we've conducted some experiments in that direction, and it's quite interesting. Now, we would find it difficult and even antipathetic to get everybody together and give them a lot of group auditing and polish them all up so they wouldn't be affected by radiation. This would be quite a project. 2.5 billion people. We say, well, why don't we take the easy route and do like the medical profession does and shoot them with stuff? Is there anything with which you could shoot a person that would do something to him radioactively? Yes, there is. There are several preparations which prevent radiation. And one of these, they're getting rather common now, and progress is being made on the whole subject. Here is something from The New Scientist of the 28th of March, 1957, by Dr. Peter Alexander, Protection Against Radiation. And he tells us that working independently, several people have found that the harmful effects of radiation can be reduced by injecting some quite simple chemicals before exposure to the rays. And the comment on the whole article is, could medicines be used to protect against the effects of radiation? A short time ago, such a suggestion would have been thought absurd. Today, chemical protection is the subject of much research. Well, we were leading the van on this. We already knew something. We knew that old-time nicotinic acid re-stimulated and ran out sunburns, and that a person who had been given nicotinic acid actually did not receive a continuous effect from it. Now, anybody can make this test, and it so happens that there is an incorrect entry in both the British and American pharmacopoeias, and that says that nicotinic acid, old style, not new niacinamide, nicotinic acid turns on a flush. In overdose, is therefore toxic. That is not correct. That is not correct. People who take nicotinic acid in overdoses, you have to take about 90 grains of it to kill yourself, so it's some tremendous, I mean, that's a handful like that. But people who take this do get red and prickly. And that's all it says in the pharmacopoeia concerning it. Now, that's a fascinating thing, that it would be that deficient in information. Could it be that these people never looked? Because that isn't what it does at all. In a large number of the cases, it doesn't turn on flush at all. It turns on hives. In a large number of cases, it turns on gastroenteritis. In a large number of cases, it turns on aching bones. And in many cases, it turns on a fearful, terrified condition. Not a physical reaction at all. Here's a variable reaction from something toxic. And what sort of a toxic pill is it, if you please, which, when administered over a period of time, is no longer toxic? Even though all the time it's being administered, it is over the top of toleration. The body cannot tolerate the amount of it which is being administered, and after a while, it no longer has any effect. That's a crazy one. Unless you know Dianetics and Scientology, it doesn't make any sense at all. What does nicotinic acid do? Nicotinic acid runs out sunburns. And when you give it to a person originally, why, he might say is a virgin. And he gets gorgeous sunburns. He just turns red as a beet. If you were to ask him what he was looking at, ask him to close his eyes and ask him what he's looking at, he's looking at a beach or something while this is running out, you see? And you keep him on a regimen of this every day, and after a while, two things happen. One, he no longer gets sick when nicotinic acid is administered to him. And two, he doesn't have a bad reaction from sunburn. In fact, it gets a little bit difficult to burn. We made the test with sun lamps and found out that his ability to be burned was improved by the administration of nicotinic acid and the running out of past burns. This is radiation. One day I was walking down the street wondering with some of the boys, and I was wondering what on earth there might be on this subject, and I suddenly remembered the series of tests which we made clear back in 1950, and this funny thing we had found out about nicotinic acid. And this was a strange thing. And it was in total disagreement with the pharmacopoeia. But anybody, any medical, any biochemist could make the same experiment. He would administer a couple of hundred milligrams of this per day to somebody, and he would watch all of these different manifestations, which aren't recounted in the pharmacopoeia, and he would watch them damp out and eventually disappear and not recur. Until you administered 500 a day for several days running, and 500 a day would turn it all on again a little bit. And now we give him 1,000 a day for several days, and we'd find out there's just a tiny little bit left. And now we give him 2,000, we get no effect. We can feed people this toxic drug known as nicotinic acid without any effect whatsoever. That doesn't look to me like a toxic drug, does it to you? Well, anybody could make this experiment, so we're on very, very safe ground with regard to it. And having suddenly remembered this series of experiments, I went and dug them up in the files of the Hubbard Dynamic Research Foundation and thought, well, that's fascinating. And we had a brave volunteer. Electronics people are always willing to volunteer on things like this. And he took nicotinic acid over a period of many, many days, couple of weeks. And sure enough, our old experiments were bearing out with one exception. The reactions per dose were 5 and 6 times as violent as they had been in 1950. So we got a hold of some people that had been flat on nicotinic acid in 1950, and we gave them some courses all over again, and we found out that the sunburns they had run out in 1950 did not run out, but they got stuck Vizios of the countryside around Phoenix. And they got sick at their stomachs a little bit. They were better off than other people, but they got an entirely different reaction. We ran that out. And the Washington staff was quite heroic. At that moment, they began to swallow pills in various dosages, always willing to experiment. And we finally added it into an old dosage known as gunk, a horrible concoction. Enough pills that, fellow says, well, can you take all that? You can't get it in your mouth. We know quite a bit about this. We know, for instance, the administration of B1 and some other preparations accelerate the discharge of mental image pictures. We know somebody who's given B1 more easily runs for the next 50 minutes or so, mental image pictures. He sees them better and so forth. We know that people who have nightmares given B1 are relieved of these nightmares. We know that delirium tremens and so forth is relieved of B1. In other words, B1 has a positive reaction on the subject of delusion. So we added that into the package and stabilized it. But there is something that everybody should know about B1, that when taken in large doses, all by itself, it knocks your teeth out of your head. Something that no pharmaceutical house has told anyone about. We learned it the hard way. We learned this, by the way, in 50. Learned it better in 53. We made a lot of experiments along this line. Tremendous amount of research has gone into this. We finally isolated those chemicals which are apparently the most effective. B1 is one of them. But B1 has to be backed up by two other vitamins. Otherwise, it is deadly. B1 is more deadly to take by itself than nicotinic acid ever will be, in spite of the violent reaction obvious of nicotinic, because D1, taken all by itself, is a quiet, sneaky reaction of knocking all your teeth out of your head and pulling your bones dry of calcium. It must have calcium. It is calcium hungry. And calcium, to go into the bloodstream and to work well, must have ascorbic acid, vitamin C. Therefore, we have these three things which cannot be taken one independent of another. And I'm telling you something now that Park and Davis and the rest of the big drug houses need a little bit of a slap on the wrist for never having experimented with or developed. But we, again, should not be mad at these fellows simply because we know more than they do. But these three things, these people are not, they're always finding out that this drug is bad that has been administered for years, needs other drugs. B1 must be administered with, whenever you take it, evidently, ascorbic acid and calcium. The dosages, by the way, which go together on those three things, just those three things all by themselves, is B1 if taken at the rate of 25 to 50 milligrams, which is quite a dose of B1, must be taken with at least 10 to 15 grains of dicalcium phosphate and 2 to 300 milligrams of vitamin C, ascorbic acid. Now, that ratio is necessary. Otherwise, you lose your teeth. This stuff is given rather irresponsibly today out in the society because they don't know too much about it. All right. Now, nicotinic acid will work all by itself. It doesn't have to be backed up by anything else. It simply works faster with what we call a guck bomb in the foundation. Guck is what the soldiers use to clean their rifles, you know. It's dreadful stuff, so we call this stuff guck. And it could be taken all by itself, and if it were taken, it would be taken in this fashion. Of just 200 milligrams, these are just reports of experiments I'm making here. I'm not advising you to do anything. 200 milligrams of nicotinic acid once a day at the same time of the day. Every day, 200 milligrams of nicotinic acid. For how long? Oh, I don't know, 30 days. Something on that order. But the length of time would actually be until it's flat. The amount of reaction you'll get from radiation at the end of that time isn't worth worrying about. But, it doesn't work too well and will give you nightmares if you don't take it with the guck. So let's throw the guck in there. And we get a formula, something of this character. Nicotinic acid, 200 milligrams. Dicalcium phosphate, 15 to 20 grains. Usually is accompanied by vitamin D or gastrol. Iron in the form of ferrous gluconate, 10 grains. Sulfate is not quite as good. B1, 25 milligrams. Riboflavin, which is vitamin B2, 50 milligrams. That is used, you know, in the treatment of pellagra and so forth. And ascorbic acid, 2 to 500 milligrams, somewhere in between there. It doesn't have to be perfect or something. That's the formula of dianazine as it was finally leveled out and established. I'll go over that again. You just might be interested. It's nicotinic acid, 200 milligrams, dicalcium phosphate, 15 to 20 grains, iron ferrous gluconate, 10 grains, B1, 25 milligrams, riboflavin, 50 milligrams, ascorbic acid, vitamin C, 2 to 500 milligrams, and that is dianazine. And that is the wildest stuff you ever tangled with. That's a wild one. That's more physical sensation than you've run into in many a day. Why isn't it the best thing? Well, it's a cure. It does something. Auditing eventually runs it out. Auditing is much better than this dosage. But if you didn't have anything else, this would be quite interesting. Now, this does all sorts of wild things. It runs out radiation on all forms and shapes and sizes, or what appears to be radiation, proofs a person up against it to some degree. I'm not giving it to you as anything but the highest level of development which has been attained at this time on biochemical knockdown of radiation. And that's all it is. It's just the highest level we've reached at this time. Now, it does some interesting things. It turns on and runs out incipient cancer. We've seen it do it. Skin cancer, fellow didn't have very much liability to skin cancer, just a few little moles and things like that. Feed him this dianazine, all of a sudden, why, his whole jaw turns into a raw mass of cancer, the most ghastly thing you ever saw. He keeps on with it, and the next thing you know, it boils right on down to nothing. We were looking at a case of cancer that might have happened, and it evidently ran out. Now, we've seen this, you see. Colitis, somebody had a little bit of colitis that worried him a trifle. From time to time, we feed him dianazine. He suddenly starts bleeding from the intestines. He gets very upset. It knocks him into a cocked hat. He keeps on with dianazine, comes out at the other end with exactly no colitis. What was he facing? He was facing an eventual colitis of a fatal nature, hemorrhages. But we ran it out. Now, that does these odd things, which are all radiation manifestations. In other words, we do have a chemical reaction to it. There is an auditing reaction to it, and the best auditing is done in the absence of dianazine. Don't take dianazine and audit, you know. Don't audit people full of dianazine because it's just going every which direction. This is taken once a day only with milk and some chocolate. And why am I saying to you milk and some chocolates? Because you don't eat well enough to stand up to it. See? That's fact. You don't eat well enough to stand up to it. The level of food intake from country to country varies, and we found that those people who didn't eat too much in the way of rations got a very poor reaction to this, you understand? And this, therefore, was something that we had to take into account, so we experimented a little bit, and we found this interesting fact that if you gave it with milk and some chocolate or any glucose of some sort, it worked faster. And we found that it worked on people that it didn't work on when we did give them some milk and glucose. So we took it along with those things and it worked itself out. In other words, those people who are the poorest fed would be the most susceptible, evidently, to radiation. All right, is there any other factor involved here? Well, there could be thousands of factors involved. We haven't yet begun to fight along this particular line, but I will tell you that in auditing procedure, CCH, with the added command of making the earth a little more solid, handles radiation, the like of which you never heard of, because evidently, speaking from parascientology, people have lost too many planets already because of radiation. And if we're alert and if we do our job, there's no reason to worry about radiation now, at this time particularly, but there is our same old worry about the case level and the health level of the peoples of Earth. And if we continued along in this same direction, why, we would also win in the form of radiation. Who knows but what we wouldn't get a plague tomorrow that would knock everybody flat. I assure you it would be the people who were worried and in a bad state of health who would get knocked flat first. So if you want to get over the top of a plague, whether man-made or bug-made, why, audit them. Now that seems to me to be just about all I can tell you offhand that you would find of use to you in understanding and in handling the subject of radiation. Thank you very much.